Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
Download the Odyssey app and listen on demand anytime.
Brian Hoyer talking about his buddy Mike Vrabel, who he just didn't talk back to. He didn't start a bleep talking dialogue with him because he'd go for the throat.
Yep.
I believe that. You can kind of tell just by looking at him. He's that kind of guy.
Yeah.
You don't even have to hear him talk. You just look at him. You're like, yeah, that's a guy. It's a guy who probably gives it pretty good. You know.
You know what I found out about him this week that I did not know that breaks my rule?
What's that?
He's an only child.
Really?
Yeah. And I don't tend to like only children.
Mm.
It's just a general thing in my life I've noticed.
Either you guys only children back there?
Oldest of four.
Wow.
I have a younger sister, thank God.
And,
and I
sister.
Like you both. Yeah. You're good people.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yep.
You?
I have a little brother. What do you have?
I have
I'm
two sisters and a couple half sibling. No,
that would be funny.
Hates himself.
And then you'd be like, that explains a lot.
It certainly does.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I have two sisters and a couple, three half siblings. So
okay.
There's plenty of them rolling around.
Oh, yeah,
so I just generally think those types of people grow up a certain lifestyle in a certain way, and it just kind of paints the picture of who they are. Mike Vrabel, to me, is not like one of them.
Mm.
He's a ball buster like he grew up in a Gronk house.
Yeah.
Like he had to deal with crap his whole life, and you had to fight for everything you got. And
you had to fight for every last French fry. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's what he seems like.
Yeah, definitely.
And I like him. But, yeah, no, I wouldn't advise getting into a back and forth with him, especially this team. Nobody. I would say nobody on this team. Okay, maybe David Andrews. If you want to talk a little bit, I can't think of another person who, in experience, stature, whatever, should say one thing to Mike Vrabel. It won't go well.
Yeah.
You're not Gonzo, you might be getting there in a year or two, somewhere in that phase.
He doesn't strike me as a big talker, but I don't know. Sometimes on the field you see him going in.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Well, that's that whole Stephon Gilmore comparison. Like,
right.
He says it softly, but you're like, what'd you say?
Yeah.
Did you say what I think?
Did you just
said?
Whisper something really mean to me? It's not nice.
But other than that, like, no, no, no. Y'all keep your mouth shut. Y'all are not on that level, and he will destroy you. And that might be part of what he needs to bring to this team in the rebuilding of the culture and the competitive nature and the dogfight and non-soft and all those things.
Sure, if it works. I mean, you know, if he's able to lead by example and not just be an a-hole to everybody, like, you have to have some substance behind it, I guess, is the point.
Oh, sure.
Same thing with, you know, guys like Vermeil and, you know, Gerard Mayo and guys who were very sort of hands-off and touchy-feely or whatever.
Perfect.
And that's, you know, it's different. It's you have to be able to back it up with substance.
Right.
And it can't just be big personality or certain personality. Like, everybody, all coaches have, successful and otherwise, have different personalities.
Sure.
That's not really what dictates the success of their teams.
Do you doubt his substance?
Do I doubt Vrabel's substance?
Yeah.
A little bit.
Ooh.
A little bit.
Ooh.
Just based on the way it ended there. I feel like people are really over-pumping it, and that's kind of, I just naturally want to push back on that. I feel like everybody's just so enthralled by his personality. And, you know, I do think that he was a good coach. I don't think he was a bad coach in Tennessee, but it did not end great there. Hmm. And I think he's coming into a situation here in New England that's a lot like the situation he was at the end in Tennessee. A bad roster, kind of a weird relationship maybe with, between, not with him per se, but between ownership and the front office and maybe some of the coaching staff, not all super copacetic there. And he can come in and fix that maybe. You know, if he does, that's great. But I just feel like this is closer to the bad years in Tennessee, what he's going to be walking into, than the good years.
Right. And he interrupted Greg on that, I think. Something culture, something. Mm. And he's like, we got fired because we didn't win enough games.
Right.
Like, he boiled it down pretty simply, which is why I do think it's interesting that he's distanced himself from winning early on.
Mm-hmm.
And most of his comments have been in relation to effort and things they can do. There's been no specific, like, we got to win games right away.
Right.
But you can't be specific about it either. That was actually a mistake, I thought.
Yeah, we can't go out and win 9 games this year. You can't put a number on it.
No, like, I mean, yeah. He also, like Gerard said, we're going to win games.
I guarantee we'll win more games than last year is what
Gerard
said.
But then he also said, we're going to win games, maybe not this year. And I was like, wait, what? Are you already looking past this? You can't act.
Robert said that, too.
We all know you're doing it.
Yeah.
Don't really specify it and voice it. It's not a great look.
True. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. Tommy Curran joins the show in a few minutes. Here's Tony in West Springfield. Go ahead, Tony.
Hey, so there's a lot of parallel. Listen, so O.J. Mayo, right, he got basically Bill Belichick's team. They invested nothing else. He had to take Bill.
O.J. Mayo, Gerard Mayo. O.J. Mayo is a basketball player.
Yeah. Gerard Mayo. I'm sorry.
Okay. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. So he had to take that roster from players he didn't pick, and this is what we're grading him on. And now Vrabel's going to take over, and the Patriots have to spend money because of the bargain agreement, right? Like, yeah. Like, they're going to invest. He's getting a whole different layout. So it's almost like the Rooney Rule interviewing thing. I feel like Kraft totally, like, tanked last year, and here he is. He's going to invest a bunch of money, and Vrabel's going to look great. They're going to win 8 or 9 games because they're going to invest money. They're going to get players, and they're going to support Vrabel when they did none of that last year. For Mayo.
Yeah, Tony, they mostly re-signed their own guys last year, very famously, of a 4-win team, which people questioned at the time, and it ended up being very, very reasonable to question that. You're going to bring back pretty much everyone from this crappy 4-win team that Bill Belichick, great Bill Belichick, couldn't even squeeze more than a handful of wins out of, and you're going to give that to Gerard Mayo. Now, Mayo didn't exactly help himself, but that's a fair point, right? Like, the roster, we agree, is the bigger problem than the coach last year.
Yes, yeah. And the roster should be better this year with, at the very least, another top 5 pick and money spent externally. Not
right.
Money spent to keep people, but actually bring in, even if they're not great, you should have better talent when you spend $100 million, $130 million to upgrade the roster. It's not dissimilar to what I feel about Belichick at UNC. Yeah, they committed $20 million to their NIL.
Yeah.
They should get better. Is that his coaching, or did they just go buy better players in NIL deals?
Good point.
And Mac Brown should be like, wait a minute. If you had given me $20 million worth of NIL players, I would have won more games, too.
Yeah, probably. There are other, not just at wide receiver. I mean, you know, Khalil Mack's a free agent this year. There's a lot of good free agents who are going to be on the block this year, unless they get re-signed, which could happen. But
middling,
like,
veterans, that could be interesting.
Yeah, which maybe you're not. We talk about teams being in their cycles. Maybe the Patriots aren't in the cycle for guys like that yet, but they should be. You should always be ready to bring in more talent when you're a team like this, even if they're 30 or 33 years old, whatever. Like that, I'm fine with that. And, you know, there's some guys like that who are going to be out there. There's some the kid for the tackle from Minnesota, if he hits the market, like Robinson, like that could be that could be an interesting thing to look into. But again, in free agency, yeah, you have all this money. They're gonna have to re-sign some of their guys. You know, it's just the roster's not big, or it's too big to go into it and turn over 50% like you want them to
do. I'm betting and I'm
hoping.
Which
I also want them to do too, by the way. I don't like this roster. I like it if they flipped a bunch of it, but that's just, I think, it's tough to imagine that realistically happening.
And then the other thing that the caller brings up, Tony brings up, is the whole timetable got expedited, right? Like, they thought Bill Belichick was going to be here for 2. He was here for 1.
Right.
And then when they brought Mayo in, they thought it was going to be a multi-year rebuild. But things were so ugly with Bill, you had to get rid of him. And then things were so ugly with Mayo, you had to get rid of him. You couldn't stick with the plan. And that's why it all went awry.
Yeah. And now here we are. Hoping it's all going to change.
It's all on Vrabel.
Under the Mike Vrabel regime, which has now begun. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. But joining us right now here on the phone is your friend and mine, NBC Sports Boston's own Tom E. Curran. He's brought to you by Drains by James, Eastern Massachusetts' top provider of drain and sewer cleaning and repair. And by Wise Snacks. No one does crunchy, salty, or cheesy better than Wise Snacks. Tom E. Curran, how are we doing today?
O.J. Mayo. The hell?
I was like, where is this call going? O.J. Mayo. But yeah, eventually figured it out. Tom, nice to have you on today. Let's go ahead and start with the Mike Vrabel of it all, as he has now been installed as the head coach. And more so than that, it seems like he's going to be kind of the CEO of this team. Is that fair to say? Is that how you'd characterize what his role is going to be here? Schefter said he's going to be the man. You've basically said he's going to be the man. That's it, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Me in the preamble. Let's cut to the chase here.
Okay.
He is the capo di tutti capo. And I think that we have a tendency, whether it be on television, radio, or even in your private conversation with friends, to theorize that, oh boy, who's got the hammer? Who's the last guy? Who's got the final word? And I think that teams try to avoid that to get to a point where there's rancor. And I know we can point to the situation with John Robinson and Mike Vrabel in Tennessee with A.J. Brown. But if you really look closely at that situation, Vrabel was in constant contact with A.J. Brown about trading him to Philadelphia because it became untenable to get a contract done. His disgust wasn't with necessarily John Robinson overruling him. It was disgust with having to move on from him for whatever constraints. So guys don't generally get to the point where they're at each other's throats. And we certainly hear of times when it happened. Bill Parcells here overruled by his staff, making the right call, by the way, on Terry Glenn. Mm. But it generally doesn't get to that point. So Vrabel does, I believe, have final say, but it's with support. That's my best understanding of Elliot Wolf's role. Support, support, support. What do you need, Mike? I'm going to provide that to you.
Tom,
and he will do that.
Tighten up, because I'm about to blow smoke.
No kidding.
Yeah, no, I thought you got the most interesting piece of audio from Monday out of Mike Vrabel in your stand-up with him. The comment that I'm paraphrasing a little, but basically there were some limitations that prevented right. Elliot from investing totally in personnel. Then I watched you on TV admit, I don't really know what that word investment meant there, because I didn't know exactly what he meant. Have you been able to dig a little deeper, ascertain now what the hell that meant?
Yeah, I get some clarity, and it had nothing to do with finances, more to do with so many people in their first year in their positions that people were spread thinly, and Wolf was as well. Again, as I said when we discussed this briefly the other day, it doesn't excuse Chukwuma Okorafor or Caden Wallace. No, why did I mention him? He's fine. Or Chukwuma Okorafor or,
KJ Osborne.
Yes, thank you. Caden Wallace is fine. I'm not slandering him yet. But it does explain that there were a lot of people in their first year in their positions, Elliot Wolf included, Gerard Mayo included. So it kind of went, in hindsight, the way we feared it might. I remember talking to my guy, right, Mike Reese, and your guy too, Mike Reese. Mm. And he looked at me with that Reese-ian face on. He goes, how do you think this is going to go? I said, it might be pretty tough. We all kind of suspected it might be, and it was.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think that if you... I wasn't
did
sure.
I answer that question?
He caught you with one of those pauses again,
I wasn't
again,
sure if
Arcan.
That was a pause you were going to keep going or
no,
not.
Did I answer that question
yes.
on the investment?
Yeah, yeah, because I think
some people... It was an investment of time.
Right. Some people wondered if it was just finance, and immediately their connection is, oh, he's got limitations put right. in place by Robert and Jonathan. The Crafts were imposing some sort of limitations, and I think mm-hmm. it's good to clear that up if that wasn't the case. I think that's important.
No, he was spread very thin. And again, and I think that there is probably a continued, well, it wasn't us. We gave him the players. They just couldn't coach him. That goes on that is certainly, it's probably true to a degree. You're just not supposed to say it.
Yeah, you're not supposed to say it. It's right.
Not.
Especially when you hired some of the coaches on that side of the ball, Elliot.
Good point.
Right.
With that in mind, when you're trying to strike a balance between the dictatorial way that Bill Belichick sort of ran everything and the collaborative way of Gerard Mayo, how do you strike that balance with a big personality like someone like Mike Vrabel?
You hope that Mike is amenable to doing it. You hope that Mike has the emotional IQ to be able to understand that when he yields the floor is yielded to you, and you should step up with some courage, make your points. And I think that as much as Elliot Wolf looks, you know, like a deer in the headlights when he is at the podium, he must have some acumen. I mean, people speak very highly of him. We don't see the best of him at the podium,
yep.
but I'm sure that he can confidently speak about the things that he believes in after the amount of time he spent in the league. He doesn't have a lot of pelts on the wall for great successes. But, you know, I would imagine that Mike would be the one who allows people to say, all right, I know I got a big personality and people don't want to get pooped on by me, but I have to give them the latitude and room to make their
to do their jobs. And that's where I think there's a big difference. There's an ongoing comparison to Bill Parcells this week. Bill was kind of a bully. I don't think Vrabel's necessarily a bully because he does a lot of it with a smile on his face. And he also seems to be less of an angle guy than the two Bills who have preceded him here as head coach of the Patriots. I really do think he's authentic and not a guy whose loyalty will depend upon what you can do for him.
So I wasn't going to ask you this, but you just struck a nerve when you brought up the comparisons because they've been everywhere. A comparison I've made, which is a little bit of a stretch because this guy was never a head coach, but is Dante Scarnecchia, who's a guy that could bully the hell out of people, but then also they loved him. They cried about him. They wanted to hug him. They would do anything for him. Do you think there's anything to maybe sort of that comparison?
Yeah, because Dante could be, as we know, an exceptionally gentle and kind individual with those, you know, nice Italian brown eyes. Oh, he's so nice. And then you hear him on the field.
Oh, my God.
Just absolutely demolishing Gronk and Hernandez in their first training camp. It was hysterical. Not hysterical. It was like, it was kind of funny, actually. But, I think that's a good comp. But I think Mike is unique. And they haven't had a coach quite like him because he was a player and a very talented player. And I think that his empathy that he shows the players in terms of what he was talking about the other day is very genuine. That said, he is going to be a bear for these guys in their first 6 months on the job. He's not going to be Mr. Oh, really? Oh, your kid's he's got a dance recital. Okay, you know, you don't have to come in. you got a family crisis. Take whatever time you need, but you're not going to bail out because your wife has a dentist appointment and you know the kids need a sitter. Figure that out.
Yeah, we're talking with Tommy Kern, NBC Sports Boston. Tom, is there now or is there about to be any kind of major shakeups in the front office or maybe even above that with this team?
I don't think there'll be major. No, I think that there's speculation about different individuals perhaps leaving. Robin Glazer, who has constantly been had her role overstated, I think is kind of a symbolic individual to talk about the Kraft's meddling. She's a contracts person, a salary cap person, a what do they call that when you have to comply? Oh, compliance person. more
Nailed
than anything else.
Cracked himself up, too.
I led myself right to it. She always had been, and she did those things for Bill. And during the period of time, she felt overlooked, I believe, over the course of Bill Belichick's tenure. So she had hoped that things would be a little different after Bill left and she'd get a little bit more credit and a little bit more of a forward-facing opportunity. And in so doing, I think she put herself out there as being a mover and a shaker with the football team. And when you say that, I think you have to be intuitive if you're an individual to understand that people only care about the football team vis-a-vis the X's and friggin' O's and the wins. They don't care that much about the contracts, only as it affects the on-field product. So when the on-field product sucks, anybody who poked their head up and said, hey, I'm part of this, is going to get blamed, especially if you have the narrative here that is longstanding, that Kraft tend to be meddlers. And this is another individual who now can be perceived as meddling. And Bill Belichick knew and knows that bringing up Robin Glazer is a tremendous opportunity to kick the Kraft in the shins. And Bill's within his rights. He's been kicked in the shins multiple times in the last 2 years by the Kraft. Not that he didn't deserve it, but it got overboard. So Robin Glazer became a chew toy in the mix for these two sides. And I don't know if that's going to be a role that she continues in, whether by her volition or the team, or probably by her volition, because I think she does a lot of the poop work in there that nobody else has ever really done, and she would be a loss in that regard.
Tom, yesterday I asked Adam Schefter on here an open-ended question about the offensive coordinator search, and I thought it was kind of interesting. The only name he brought up was Josh McDaniels. So is that telling, or is that sort of a bag job yet again? Is Josh McDaniels going to be the OC?
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I would imagine so. And that's based on no conversations with... No, I mean, it's based on no current conversations.
Yep, yep.
Josh has opportunities, I think, throughout the league and throughout professional football. So we'll see what he ends up deciding to do. I think the Patriots are going to have options, too. They could go and get Nick Cayley. They could go and get... Phil Perry mentioned a guy to me earlier today. He was a quarterback's coach
last year
with them.
No.
What was the name again?
Wes Phillips.
Yeah, QB coach with Tennessee?
Nope. Different guy.
Okay. Charles, I believe.
Charles London.
Yes.
Yeah, I used to sit right outside his door. I shared a cube. Right. Nice guy.
Oh, yeah, you were talking about him.
Nicest guy ever.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, he spent 20 years going from a stadium guy. He played football at Duke.
Yep.
He was a stadium guy with the Patriots. And Phil mentioned him to me. He's like, you heard of this guy, Charles London?
Yeah.
So, looking him up. So
I'm rooting for him. That'd be a great story. He used to be, setting up contracts, and now concerts, and now he'd be, running the offense. That'd be the greatest story ever.
Well, and I think, that you have to be hypersensitive to the way the fan base reacts to that, and you want to do the solid. He's not... Don Law Promotions. He did play football at a high level at Duke, and he's been a coach for 20 years. So I think people go, we got a quarterback guy running it.
It's like Bill bringing in the lacrosse coaches. It's like kind of the same thing.
Yeah. So
it'd be creative.
But I think it's Josh. It would. I think Josh makes the most sense, and I think that Arcand kicks back on that because he's like, he wants somebody a little more novel and plugged in. Is that correct, Christian?
Yeah, basically. Just someone who's, maybe going to take him in a different direction and someone who's not just in their Rolodex and someone they're familiar with, because I feel like they've fallen into that pattern a lot. And I also wonder, Tom, he may be someone that would jump at a job like this, but despite Drake May being here, this was still a bottom offense in the NFL last year. Is it how much more of an attractive destination would you say it is for a potential offensive coordinator now as opposed to last year?
Probably 90% more attractive. I bet they wouldn't have the head coach they have right now if it wasn't for Drake May. You still had Bailey Zappe running around out there, or Jacoby Brissett, or Mac. It would not be as attractive a destination. You have a guy who's got the potential, is at least shown glimpses of being a player who could be a top 7, top 5 quarterback and a perennial Pro Bowler. That's the hardest position. I'm not telling anybody anything they don't know. Hardest position to fill. They appear to have capably filled it.
Well, there you go. Tommy Curran, great to talk with you.
That
was a good pause.
That pause got him.
I'll be talking with you again once football season starts back up. As you know, there's going to be some changes here at the station. I'm kicking up tonight. So it's been a pleasure, sir. And we'll be talking again when football season fires back up. You'll be talking with Ted and Andy and Fitzy now from now on.
I appreciate your great patience with me, Christian, when I was a baby and didn't like your questions. And I wish you great luck in the evening.
I'll work on those questions. Maybe next time we talk, they'll be better for you.
You're
there,
great.
Tom. What do
You're
you think?
Great. Anytime you need me at night, I'm happy to help.
That's very nice. Thank you. Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
All right. That's Tommy.
No chance he answers that call.
Joining us. Yeah, I'm not even going to bother.
Hey, Tom, I got a 9:30 opening. I could use it. Did you say 9:30?
You'd be like, who is this? 617.
No chance.
779-7937. I got a better chance of getting Schefter on, probably. I would agree with that. 779-7937. Quick break. When we return, we lost a legend today. Two legends, as a matter of fact. One in the sports world, one in the world of film. I guess you could say the sports guy was in the world of film as well. We'll get into our eulogies for both Bob Uecker and David Lynch right after this.